Welcome to our Friday Five Live podcast hosted by Meg Foster. Meg has spent 20 years in higher education focused on student success initiatives and working in areas such as orientation, faculty development, online learning, student leadership, and first-year initiatives.
All right. Well, thanks for being with us, everyone. Happy Friday. If you have any questions to share during the session, just use the chat feature. And if you can just be sure to select everyone when you submit your questions and comments. And I want to mention your cameras and mics are muted, so you don't need to worry about that. And you all will have access to the recording within a few days. If you're a GoToKnowledge member, it will be on your dashboard. Otherwise, we will email it to you. And our host today is Meg Foster. And in addition to being the host of our event and an online learning specialist here at Innovative Educators, Meg is also a career coach at Reynolds Community College. And we are so excited to have Andrea Harris with us today. And we were just talking about how we think she was one of our very first podcast guests. Andrea joined Hillel at UCLA as the inaugural director of faculty and community relations after spending 20 plus years as a student services administrator at Pepperdine University. And Meg, I will pass it over to you now.
Everybody, happy Friday. And Melissa, thanks so much for that wonderful introduction. Just as a real quick housekeeping note, it's not an extensive PowerPoint because we're really having a conversation today, but we do love your thoughts, your comments, your feedback. You guys are fantastic. We've already had such a wonderful discussion about favorite snacks. So put your questions in the chat. Just make sure that you use the drop-down menu to select everyone so we can all see those questions, and we will weave those into conversation. I'm here with a podcasting pro. In fact, I think that you've done the most podcast for any of our guests. So I feel like there should be some sort of prize for that. And this was really a topic, you know, you've come to us and talked about some just really important things around like team building and supporting staff and sort of those conversations I don't think we have enough in higher education spaces. Like, you know, and we do try to use this platform as a place to not only talk about how we support students, but also to talk about how do we support one another? Because we can't do this work, I think, without those approaches. So you came to us with this really great idea, and you're in a new inaugural role. You've been in this position, has it been a year?
Yeah, it's my second year, so I'm almost done. If we're going by an academic schedule in June, I will have completed 2 years.
So, and you really came to us and said, let's talk about what mid-year career changes might look like. I mean, I think, you know, you and I have had some pretty candid conversations about burnout in our world of student services and all of us who are working to support students. You know, we started our podcast, we were just remembering in April of 2020, we were less than a month into COVID lockdown world. And there was a lot of discussion about how the subsequent burnout, right, that we've seen and continue to kind of witness in our world of higher ed as far as staff and faculty go, and how can we create healthy spaces for that. And I think this is part of that conversation, right, that sometimes we need to adjust and change. You've made a change. I've made some changes. So really looking forward to you always have just such an approachable presence and grateful.
We're in it together, and I think that I'll say something else too, which is when I was at Pepperdine at some point a bunch of years ago, I had a need to hire somebody, and one of the applicants had worked as a temp on the second floor of my building greeting people, so I knew him. I just knew him because he said, hello, how are you? And that was it. And then when I received his paperwork and his application, I mean, I had spoken to him a little bit here and there. I saw that he had years of experience. He'd been a dean of student services at another school. He had so many very, very, very responsible and important roles at an institution, and had moved to this part of the country and was looking for work and could only get it as a temp at Pepperdine. So I hired him to work on the front lines. And after he was hired and after the 3 months, one day he took me aside and he was crying. And I thought, oh my gosh, what did I do now? And he looked at me and he said, I just want you to know that I couldn't get anyone to look at me because I think because of my age, because I was so experienced. And I told you I wanted to do something that had a lesser level of responsibility because I was tired from that. But no one else had given me the chance to even say that in the first place. They just out the gate wouldn't let me come in. And that stuck with me. And he worked in my department until he retired. So it was it was a something, and it was something that I had never heard of. Also, he's a man, I'm not gonna lie. Like, he's a guy, he's a Caucasian guy. And I felt like, if this is his experience, what about all the rest of us, and how would it be? And then so many of us too, and this is a bit of a deviation, but thinking of all of us, we have so many transferable skills that we don't actually even identify, and they're just part and parcel of our toolbox and who we are. We don't think twice about them. And so when we can start looking at ourselves through that sort of a critical professional lens, all of a sudden we have far more opportunities than we ever thought we would. So I'm sorry, I deviated, but here we are. So.
No, I think, I mean, this is a conversation, and I think your deviations always take us in interesting directions. Yeah, I
You.
just had this conversation last night. I've made a transition from one role in the community college to now actually spending time in a high school setting where I'm supporting students who are looking at a community college. And we were talking about career changes and living in Virginia, we've had this massive federal layoff. That we are still reeling from in our state, and seeing people who are, 50, 55, who are having to shift into roles that are kind of where they're saying, please look at me. I know I have all this experience, but now I need a job, and I'm willing to do things that maybe aren't as related to that career, or I don't need to be in a leadership position. I'm happy to be in a supporting role, as I transition. So just such a timely conversation, because I think people are shifting in our world for lots of reasons, looking to make differences. So some folks are talking about the PowerPoint. Just so you know, it's only a few slides, and most of it is the questions that are guiding the conversation we're going to have today. But don't forget, put your questions in our chat as well. So, I know when I've needed to make changes, I know those feelings that have been inside me. But curious about some of the signals that you might be seeing, right? Or you've experienced in this last couple of years as you've made this new transition, that maybe are some of those sort of signals that are saying, hey, it's time to think differently or start to
Yeah.
consider something else.
Thank you. It's a weird one because it happens to every one of us at various points in time, but it's so easy to write it off as some other thing. So if let's say I have really enjoyed advising students for X amount of years, however long this has been, and then I start coming home feeling like, yeah, maybe I don't really want to be here and I don't know about that. That could also be me because I'm tired and I'm exhausted and I have competing interests in life. And so it's very important, I think, to be able to spend just enough time, like not hours with yourself, but enough time to say, this feeling of ennui or this agitation is really because of some other thing, or literally it's because I am now allergic to my job. And so to be able to take the time to figure it out, things you will, I mean, the most obvious sign to me is a task that has used to give you enjoyment and a sense of fulfillment no longer does that. That is the easiest, the lowest hanging fruit for this conversation. And that is usually to me the first sign because there are a lot of things that, at the end of the day, working in higher ed, not everybody says thank you. Not our bosses may not thank us either. And it's just sort of expected that we show up and serve the people we do. And sometimes you do something that takes a little bit extra out of you, and you're like, wow, I actually did a thing today, and I did something great. And if you do that something great again, and you get the feeling you get instead of satisfaction and honor and joy. Is resentment. That's a number one. For me, it's also when I start being very critical of everyone around me in an office where it's like, this one doesn't hold their weight. This one, and I'm not like that by nature. Like, I don't walk into a place and be like, yeah, you are the weak link. Goodbye. I don't do that. I'm not like that. And you know, anyone who's seen me speak before, I always literally, I promise this, and it's so a kind of Pollyanna, but I always try to find the good in somebody else and the value, so that even if it's not in the area that I'm looking for, I can see it over there, and I'll maybe pivot their responsibilities as a manager. When I start looking at everyone saying, I don't care if I see you or I don't see you, that's a red flag. And those are the ones that are at work. I think the other thing to consider too, when we're mid or late career, we typically are kind of all in where we are. And for, in my case, I was there for over 20 years. It's like, I'm going to retire from here. It's a given. I was fully vested. You know, we have a colleague on this, you know, from CSUN. They'd be at a state school in California. They have a great pension program. You're all in after a certain time period. So then it's like, well, I'll just stay. Because then your family gets benefits and all kinds of things. And so at that point, when you have these material, you know, sort of carrots hanging nearby you, it's much harder to even can allow yourself to be open to noticing the signals. And so I would say on a personal level, then this is really unique to me, and I will say I don't wish this on anybody. I had a very, very difficult, I would say, 2-year period preceding my job change. And I don't mind sharing. It was all during COVID, and you all know, I know, and Innovative Educators knows this, and Melissa's heard it 15 times. My mother had dementia, and so I was her caregiver during COVID, because her support systems from the city shut down, and she had a great program from the city. They pivoted to online, but it was like 1 hour every other week. It wasn't going to do it, and I was her caregiver. And ultimately, we all reopened, and she I eventually found a place for her to get far better care than I would have ever been able to give her, and she passed. And I was diagnosed with cancer, breast cancer, a month, literally a month after she died in that month, and then went through a year plus of active treatment and all of that. So when you have aspects of your life that are kind of in flux or difficult, often that is a time for someone to look at the sky and reevaluate what they're here to do. And again, I don't wish that on anybody, but I share that story so that you don't have to wait to that point to ask the same questions that I did, which were, am I in the right place? Am I doing the most that I can for the time that I have here? And should I be looking elsewhere to make a greater impact on the community around me? And very, very vague questions, not waiting to get a text from the sky with an answer, but by articulating the questions, I automatically, I think, and I think other people also, you open yourselves up to receiving the answer from inside you, just by asking the question. So here we are.
I mean, I think that's such an important, I'm sure many of us on that call, on listening today, have had that same experience where you have these kind of major life experiences, positive, negative. I mean, it can, but it does make you kind of look at your work world and say, okay, is this delivering, am I delivering what I need in this space? Is it delivering to me what I need? And I would, the only, you know, is your those questions that you're putting out there. I think the only one that I would add to that is what feels authentic to me.
Perfect.
And I think that I'm now reaching, as I close in closer and closer to a mid-century point of my life, that, you know, if it doesn't feel authentic, I don't want to be involved in it anymore. Like, and
And
so
it does have a different feel, because if a task is authentic, even a task or a way of being is authentic to you, it takes far less energy than anything else. And so it's an excellent question to ask. So thank you, Meg. But also thinking about, you know, what are the signs? If the same level of effort is now causing you exhaustion, and it's not explained by a physical issue, it's like a soul exhaustion, that means it's you're working sort of at odds with yourself. Because when you are, to be blunt, if you're doing something that's disingenuous and not in a pejorative way, but it's like it's just not who you are, it takes a lot more effort and it's exhausting.
Yes. Yes.
So.
I don't know if you've had this experience, but I was recently thinking about the work that I did when I was in my 20s, right before I had kids and stuff. And I don't have that energy anymore. I mean, and I'm not the kind of person, like my sister and I were laughing yesterday, our mother, who, like, if it isn't productive, she is not involved in it. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, that is a woman who is always doing something. And so I come from stock where we don't sit well, right? Like, you're always moving.
Yeah.
But I don't have the same kind of, I just don't have that energy that I had in my 20s in my work. And so I think those are important things to listen to in your body.
Absolutely. So my first job out of college, I was writing advertising copy for a very large record label in Los Angeles. And it was only because, and literally the only reason that the guy hired me was the weirdest. Well, one, because of the school I went to, and he thought it was a fancy enough school that it qualified. It's like, didn't matter what I had done there, just that that school existed and I happened to attend it. But I also, because I had done improv comedy, he thought I would be fun to work with. And this is literally, those two things got me a job at a major label in Los Angeles. Fine. What I did at I had to go out probably 3 or 4 nights a week for that job to cover events. And I thought when I left that position, and I was still, you know, it was before I was married, or, you know, it was a different life. I'm like, I can't. And what did it for me, this is just the side note, is I went to a bar. There's a bar called, a restaurant called Dantana's. It's an old restaurant in Los Angeles. And the bartender there was named Mike. I think he passed away some years ago. But at one point, I started walking in before a gig that I had to cover to write about it or whatever the case was. And he would just slide my glass of wine down the bar. And the minute I knew that he knew who I was, I stopped going. And I said, I can't be working here because this is not my lifestyle. And honest to goodness, my job now, half the week, some weeks, I'm out every single night at an event. It requires a lot of energy, and I'm able to manufacture it, and it's not exhausting for me because the work is authentic. And I'm gonna, so to put it back for you, so you may surprise yourself one day.
That's a good point. That's a good point. That if it's a different, yes, it requires energy, but I feel like I'm genuinely in the right place, doing this, and then the
Great.
inner, yeah, absolutely. And I do want to recognize that there is some privilege in having this conversation,
Of
right?
course, of course.
I mean, I'm fortunate that I have a spouse who has great health insurance, so I don't need to be the person who provides the health insurance for our family, which gives me a little more freedom than perhaps some other people have. So I do want to acknowledge that. I think one of the conversations that you kind of brought up, and I think is so important, is that I do feel like in higher ed, often we don't value our work in a way that we should. And I have a master's degree in college student personnel administration. And I do feel like I spent 2 years learning how to defend college student personnel administration as a legitimate thing,
I
right?
believe it.
And I don't know if anybody's younger than I am. Maybe we don't do that anymore. And maybe we finally, 20 plus years later, we don't have to legitimize ourselves. But I do feel like we kind of suffer from this. We are legitimate. Like, what we do does matter. It is backed in research and all these things. So this question about skills and translating to the wider work world, would love your thoughts about that. And also weave in, if you don't mind, this is how you've made this transition into this new role, like how that came to be. It's an inaugural
Sure.
position. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a weird story also. But I think, you know, to your point, the National Academic Advising Association, through which I actually met your organization, and Melissa specifically, at a fateful dinner, lo, these many years ago, that organization exists solely to legitimize this profession. And that profession, and because people met on an elevator once and said, this is so terrible that no one takes us seriously and they don't recognize the value that we add to our colleges. Let's legitimize our industry. And it's been around for years. You have been partnered with a lot of people who are members of that organization as well. And so all of this, it's a terrible situation for me to even consider that someone would suggest that someone wasted time and money on a program that worked, that spoke to their soul. Anything that someone studies, if you study it because it makes you happy, even if it has no practical applications, if it makes you happy, that has value. But at the same time, not every aspect of a program that you pursue has a one-to-one relationship to anything you're ever going to do in your job. And so that's the other thing. And so I'm sorry that you ever felt that you had to do that. That's unacceptable to me. And I also it's I think we should just take people as they come and at face value relative to the work that they're doing. If you do an excellent job, I'm not going to go back and say, well, what aspect of your PhD in economics helped you to advise somebody with their student account? It doesn't matter. You were a nice helper to that student, and then you did what I was hoping we would do. What I think that higher ed is such a niche field, in a way. I mean, there's obviously thousands upon thousands of positions at all the schools in the country, just this country, never mind all of North America and beyond. And so it's still a niche field, and I think where we get stuck, or where I've seen people get stuck, it's like I can be really good at data, but I'm not really, and I'm only good, but I'm good at it with Excel, and I don't know that I could do it on a degree audit system. So that's just a very specific example relative to someone's work assignment where they're like, I can do this here, but I can't do this. Actually, you probably can, because the same things that are in your brain to code how to do this, how to tell a spreadsheet, if I type this, I want you to make everything purple. I don't know if it does that. See, this is how good I am at Excel. It's the same skill that you can use to figure out how do I make a degree, how do I make a degree requirement pop off somebody's to-do list. And so that's like also a very basic sort of hands-on. But when you think about it, a lot of student service is customer service. I don't care if it's advising. Doesn't matter if you're faculty. Your goal at an institution, whether someone tells you this or not, is to do good enough work that the people stay at your institution and graduate. And that's ultimately what it is. The universities are looking to get their tuition dollars, and also to meet the graduation rates, which also impact their rankings. And so these are all things that the university top level is going to be looking at. And they are, and so when you think of it like that, you're actually working in a business, even if it's a for if it's it's a nonprofit. It is a business and it is customer service. And so all of a sudden, you've now widened your scope beyond students. So if someone said, if you wanted to go, let's say, to work, you want to leave a university and maybe go be an account manager at a Fortune 500 company that it, let's say it's just let's just say it's a finance company, and or any company that is going to be portfolio management. There's a lot of money in a position like that. But you've done all that work. Yes, it's only with students, but you've been able to meet one-on-one with students, figure out what their goals are, and help them to figure out how to go from the point that they're at to the next point, which is the point that they want to be at. You can do that for any person under any circumstances if you know the stuff that's involved. So if you're working for a different company and they have different policies, it'll take you half an hour or a month, and you're going to learn the policies and then do the exact same type of work that you've done in your prior position with a different group of people. If you've ever managed someone, even if you only manage student workers, you are a manager. It doesn't matter what your title is, even if your title doesn't suggest it, because so many of our titles, too, we know we don't get paid a different amount. We might get a better title. So I was a senior director for many years at Pepperdine. I don't know what that means. I don't know why, and I wasn't a senior. I'm still not a senior in my book, but I don't know what a senior director is, but I know what I did. And so to the extent that you can be very open and critical of yourself and say, these are the hard skills that I have. And I'll always help anybody. If you need to find out where I am, please ask, and I'll give you my email address and my cell phone number. I'm always happy to help anybody to do this. Because once you can say, I have empathy, empathy can be used in any manner of settings. I am respectful, I'm professional, I have knowledge of Google Suite, I have knowledge of Microsoft. These are the basic things that most places like, and I'm a manager. It doesn't matter I manage students, doesn't matter that I manage people who don't do what this other place is asking me to do. I am a manager. And so it's about spending enough time with yourself to really catalog your list of skills, whether it's one, those are ones that came with you or ones that you've developed over time. And then we start doing going one to one with different fields to say what you know what we can do differently.
Yeah, I love being able to reframe
Yeah.
in that way. I mean, it just, I haven't stepped back and done that a look in a while to say, okay, what are the skills I possess that, I mean, we tell students to do this, right? That's what I
Yes.
find kind of funny. We tell students, oh yeah, you have way more on a resume that, the classic, how many times have you met with a student who's like, oh, I don't have anything to put on a resume? And you're like, well, tell me what you did. Well, I worked in the food service industry. I'm picking on my college freshman, right? And then when we broke down and created a resume, she was like, wow, I work in a team. I manage people. I can deal with customer service. I can,
And I
help
can
these
de-escalate a very contentious situation. Doesn't matter
right.
that it was about the heat of the temperature of the French fries. It's like
Right.
it's at that point that part is immaterial. And I had to do that when I applied for the position that I had that I have now. And that came to me in a very backwards way. I was in the middle of pre-registration at Pepperdine, or no, it was AdDrop actually. And a friend of mine texted me and said, you're the only person that I know who can do this, literally, and texted me the job. And she didn't know anything. I mean, she knew I worked at Pepperdine for as many years as I had, but what the position was looking for was more to do with who I am as a human, and a conflict, just a bunch of things all together that I happened to have. And I looked at the requirements and I didn't meet them because the requirements that they had set up were up here. So the letter that I wrote to the hiring manager, and I wasn't going to, by the way, I was like, there's not a chance that I'm who they're looking for, but I've been asking myself and I'm putting the question out, so the least I can do is try. And I wrote in the letter, your position description requires this. Here's why I don't think you need it. And here's what I would do. It was ballsy, I'm not gonna lie. And it was a nonprofit, so it's a little bit easier for me and not a huge institution. And I took a gamble and I said, here's what I would bring that you didn't articulate, and here's why I think the rest of it doesn't matter, but not as rudely or as bluntly.
Right.
And I had an interview scheduled on the phone, I think within a few hours of sending it in. I had an in-person meeting several days later, and I had a job within a week and a half.
Wow.
20, probably 21 years after ever having gone on another interview or on an
Yes.
interview.
Right.
Yeah.
So you just said some really important things. I mean, you said that, first of all, we all know it's all about the network, right? I mean, the way you get job opportunities is often through people, either you're sharing, hey, I'm looking, or they are like, hey, there's this opportunity. So, making sure we're using those networks, we're opening ourselves up to those opportunities, but then also not devaluing the work we do. I mean, I read about this all the time that particularly women, particularly people of
Of
color,
color,
that
yeah.
right, will read a job description and automatically discount themselves in those roles. Oh, I don't have that relevant experience. I haven't worked long enough. I don't, and just, but to say, here's why I'm a great fit.
And also, what's the worst that happens? You don't get a phone call. Okay. So that place doesn't, they weren't interested and you're not going to go work there, but somebody else will value all the totality of your personhood and your experience.
Right.
It's just a matter of getting from one step to the next. And it's
Well,
doable. So.
and I want to bring this up because, I think this is such an important point. If you're, looking to make a change, I mean, it can, applying for jobs can become a full-time job, right?
It can.
And I think it is important. I mean, it's often in my experience, and best if you can try to make that transition while you're still in a role, right?
Sure.
While sometimes when you're not looking, that's the best time to be looking. So, any advice around like exploring options, and while we're this question is how can you explore new career options while still working full time, managing real financial responsibilities?
Yeah, you keep your job and you smile every single day and you don't let them know what you're doing. But I think the best advice that I had, and this is going to sound really stupid, but LinkedIn is kind of a fantastic space. And I poo-pooed it for many years until a cousin of mine who was laid off from he was an engineer at a factory on the East Coast. Started posting their stories about work from how he I don't whatever he expedited on at his factory. And he was hired fairly quickly because of that. Somebody reached out and said, "I saw what you did. Can you come do that for my company?" And that was real, and that was all I needed. And so that is something that anybody can do. You can get a LinkedIn. You don't need to put open to work, but just start posting about what you do and start collecting a network relative to the things that are of interest to you. And so for me, my LinkedIn for a while, I've been doing a weekly post of lessons that I've learned that week. This post that I do, it's a way to amplify the work that I'm doing, but it's also, I hope to have personal applications to it. And it has connected me to so many different people just because people happen across it or someone else comments and then they see it. And so we can't really underestimate the importance of that. But the other thing, and you're absolutely right, it's a much easier position to be in if you're already working. And so some of us have opportunities to work remotely one day a week. That's one day where you could have 2 hours in the afternoon and you don't put that on your calendar, as long as obviously you're meeting your responsibilities. But one thing that I did is take one time on the weekend. I've done this in the past and I've encouraged other people to do this, to have various cover letters just to write them. And have different, you can have different versions of your resume, which you can work on over a month. So it's not like hours and taking you away from something. So that if you find something, you have one resume for this type of field and one that highlights things a little differently for a different type of job. And we have multiple cover letters ready to go so that if you have something, you just pop in the person's name and you're done. Or their department, and then any salient details and particulars. And so it is possible to do that while you're working full time. It is very difficult. But you are coming from a position of comfort. And so even if you've already decided that you're ready to make a change, if you can just take a very deep breath, and I was the same, it's like, okay, I'm open to making a change, and it's going to happen when it happens. But I'm going to do the most that I can do within the time period that I have, and also while still maintaining my responsibilities to this other group. And I didn't end up doing any of this at midnight. Maybe one Sunday morning before everybody else woke up, I sat at the computer and tweaked something. My husband helped me to formulate a good copy of my resume that was attractive and on one page. And so, and ask people for help. I've offered it too. And I say, I don't know who everyone who's here, but honestly, if I can be helpful to you, it will be my greatest blessing. So it is
Yeah.
definitely possible. And just don't make yourself crazy, I
Well,
think.
and I love that reminder that like how can we kind of always be open, right? So rather than it be and sometimes it needs to be reactionary, right? But rather than it have oh my gosh, it's a crisis and now I haven't looked at my resume in 10 years, right?
Always be
Maybe
ready. Yeah.
always be ready. I was struck as you were talking. Last week we had a podcast where we talked about design thinking and the work that has come out of design thinking around life design out of Stanford. And I was like, wow, we unintentionally connected two podcasts together because I
Yeah.
feel like they just, we were speaking about it more in the context of students and thinking about helping them with their careers, but that, of course, applies to all of us as well, right?
It's all the same. And any advice you give to students is advice that you've come to because of you and your life and your path to this point. So definitely give it right back to yourself.
Yes.
You know, that's an interesting how they dovetail. That's kind of cool.
And
Like
yeah,
that.
sometimes we just do these things. But if you didn't get a chance to be with us last week, I do really recommend. It was a really fun and very fascinating conversation with Mary Chris Escobar about design thinking, and then and this kind of spin-off of this concept of life design. And she talked about informational interviewing. They call it something different,
Yeah.
but I think that's such a, okay, it's time for me to pivot out of the world of higher education, but I've been in this world for 20 years and I don't maybe know as much what exists outside of it. I mean,
Yeah.
I laugh all the time. I'm like, I don't understand the world of business.
Right.
Like if the calendar year isn't like August to May, I'm not sure I understand how that works, right? But
Of course, but if you worked there, you'd have to, and you would. And
right,
so, and that's
exactly.
the other thing. Just because you don't know something now doesn't mean you're incapable of learning it in the future. And I think that is the most important piece of advice that I could give. And it doesn't really matter how old you are. If you have the willingness to do it, you'll be able to do it. So I have a, I don't like Zoom breakout rooms. I can tell you, right? Like I can't stand them. I don't mind to press a button and people go, but then it's like if you do it again later in the same one, that's the same group, and I don't want to see the same people. And so that's one thing I've had to do at my new job. And I'm like, I can't, I don't like it. And with special appreciation to the person who posted, who chatted before and said PowerPoint can be what it is. I think part of being able to step into something different and acquire new tasks is also to have humility. And
Yes.
self-deprecating humility is all often best, at least for me, you know, because I was like, I couldn't run the meeting and also divide the people into the right groups at the same time without losing and there's a at the meeting that I had, there were 35 people in attendance, and we had 25 on Zoom. And so what we were going to do is put people in breakout rooms with certain laptops on the computer, and then they would get 4 people from the. It was like a disaster, and I didn't set it up, mind you, but never mind. And there's a
Another
graduate
disaster.
student. It was a disaster, and I was so frazzled. And there's a graduate student who's about to get his PhD in library science. And I get a little chat from him saying, "Could I help you with the breakout rooms?" And I wrote back, "Yes, absolutely." So he's my breakout person for any future meetings with this particular group. But I laugh about that because I just said, like, you can learn a new skill. I'm not going to learn that one. And so the flip side of that is, as a seasoned person, in my case, I'm a little bit older, I think, but I'm like, you know what? I don't need to know how to do this. And I can do this. I can do it. I don't need to know how to do this under stress, because it's more important for me to recognize that there are other people for whom it would be a joy for them to do it. And I, who am I to deny their opportunity to have joy to help me?
Great. I love this so much. This is, yes, I don't need to do this because there are these other folks that I can lean into.
That's the thing. I mean, because we are so used to in higher ed, like, I mean, how many of you, this is like, I really want to know this. You have a job, you know what your job is. How often are you doing something that is completely nothing you ever thought you would do? Because I had so many of those. And I'm asking seriously, like, if you've been stretched because of your job in higher ed, yeah.
Certainly the same often.
Often because we're all service-minded people. And so it really the one requirement, I think, to be very successful in student affairs and student services as a whole is that you be kind. You be kind and have empathy and be willing to meet someone where they are instead of where you think that they should be. And that's it. And so if that's your sole your overarching criterion for being successful, all of a sudden you're now also doing some weird technical thing. You might also have to sit on a committee that has nothing to do with your work and have to represent your department. You're like, I don't know, and I'm not interested on all things like that. And every one of those things that are out of your usual range is something that I want you to have written down somewhere, because that shows that you were able to adapt to do something that wasn't in your original skill set. So you're a quick learn, you're adaptable, And you are able to go through a change, a professional, you know, any. So change management is a huge, also another area of study that people look at. And there are people who are experts in it and will talk about how, you know, to change the ethos of an organization. But you, on a micro level, already know how to do that and you're adaptable. That's a huge, 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 wonderful characteristic for other organizations to know. So that if something happens there, you're not going to be like, well, it wasn't like that yesterday, so I'm not going to do it today, because we've all done it. And so in theory, like if you're thinking, you know, if you're trying to go so, or thinking maybe it's time for me to have a change, I wouldn't say to view it as starting over. It's starting where you are, just somewhere different. And so for the one thing of note is that titles are fairly transferable across places. And so even if it's a different organization altogether, if you're a director at one, chances are they'll make you some form of director at the other. And they'll do that even if there's no monetary, if that's the one issue that you want. And that's something to consider if you're making a change. What we want for you for the total trajectory is that you do remain on par so that it looks to be at the, you know, either a lateral or a step up. Obviously, if you go from director to senior director, that's a different thing, even if, you know, that's a very obvious step up. But I went from you know, from a director to a director where I am now. I was responsible for, I was a student administrative services. It was a long title on a business card. My one now is also long, and it's faculty and community relations. That's a very broad umbrella. And the beauty of that too, and this is just a side note, because it is, I am the inaugural person for this position. It was brand new, and the scope of it was undetermined when I got there, and I didn't know. And so that's kind of like a wow. I sort of knew, like they had a bare bones idea. So what happens sometimes in places is that they know that there's a need to fill. And then they come up with what they think would be the best measure or position to fill that need. But they don't always know until the person gets there and starts doing the thing. When you
Yep.
say the need looks like it's here, but actually it's this, 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 and this, which combine to make this thing that you've identified. So if that's the case, then the work all of a sudden changes. And so, and I think that that's not for everybody. And so I do want to say that too. For me, it was perfect. Because then I could just say, well, I think we should do it this way, and no one could argue. And I'm
Right,
not really,
right.
I'm not pushy, but it's like, and I think too, as a manager, and I don't know how many of you are managers, if you're able to give someone the space to try something and also fail, it's the greatest gift you can give somebody. And so to please allow that for yourself too. You can, you know, not with a job necessarily. I don't want you to make a change that changes your whole life and then you're like, this is the worst thing ever. There are steps you can take in advance to figure out if that's going to work for you. And that's the informational interviews. Look at your network, use LinkedIn, add me on there, see all the weird people I've collected, and ask them to talk to you. All
Yes.
kinds of things. I'm so sorry. My son is texting me, so you hear it on the computer.
I love that advice that, I know it takes time, but doing the exploration work. And, we all know most people are really excited to talk about their jobs or what they do or how they got to be where they are. And would, happily take, sure, I'll take 20 minutes out of my week to have a conversation with you about this work that I do and what are those skills that you need and do you have those and happy to review a resume for you. I mean, I think we do live in a world where I'd like to think we'd all that most people really do want to help you and are happy to provide that time. And you also made the, comment about not wanting to jump into something that isn't the right thing. Having taken on a new role in the last 2 months, it's funny. My oldest child who's in college said to me like 3 weeks in, "How's it going, Mom?" And I was like, "I don't think I like this very much."
Oh
And
no.
she was like, "Mom, nobody likes the job the first 4 to 6 weeks they're
So
doing it
true.
because you're learning new th this is a child who's had one job. She was like, "You're learning new things. It's all new." She's like, "You got to give it at least 6 weeks, Mom." And she was so right. I had forgotten that because I hadn't been in a new position in so long.
Right.
Right? That trans I needed to give myself the grace of that transition time. And 6 weeks in, I'm all in. But it took
You know,
some time.
But it's also something that you probably have told your children in the past also about any other thing, whether it's school or a job or a program or a friendship even. And so that's, and I, which I think is beautiful to have it put back to you. Then that means that they retained it. But you know, we give advice to other people as part of our jobs on a day-to-day basis. Why would we hold ourselves to a different standard?
Yes, yes.
And we really shouldn't. And it's like if you have an inkling that you're maybe not happy where you are, or could be doing something, or that you are happy, but if you could do just this one other thing, it might be fantastic. It doesn't necessarily even mean you leave the first one, but it might also mean that you pick up a volunteer opportunity for, a few hours on a weekend that fill up your soul differently and make the day-to-day a little bit easier. And it also may
Yes.
mean that you want to look for something completely different. And it's fun. I've done this with people who are in their 60s to figure out a new path because there were during COVID, Hollywood was at a standstill, and I had a number of people working in tangential roles, supporting productions who had nothing to do. And I got two of them into different fields at that time that they had never considered because I said, well, basically, what you're doing is this. And they're like, oh, it is. Let me apply there and explain to them what my transferable skills are. And it was done. Because people do want it, people of experience. And it's not about age, it's really about the volume. And so if you can say, I have expertise in these areas, can manage these types of people and programs, and I can do X, Y, and Z, all of a sudden it doesn't matter whether you've done it, if you're an older person, you don't focus on the length of time you did it, you just at the value of the work that you did. And it's a different way to spin things. And I think it's I think anything's possible.
Wonderful way. It always goes by too fast, but we have sadly reached the end of our time together today. But thank you so much. I mean, just such
You.
positive words to remember, the strengths that we have. Take that time to really think about who we are, what we need. Give ourselves the space to do that kind of reflection and know that you've got a lot of networks out there. LinkedIn is great. Find Andrea on LinkedIn. She's wonderful and well-resourced, well-connected. And if she says she will, is open to supporting you, please know she means that with everything she has. So thank you for the gift of time with you today.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Happy Friday, everybody. We hope there is time for rest and renewal in your weekend ahead. I think that's so important, something that Andrea has left with us a lot of reminders over the years. And so rest and renewal. And I hope you'll join us next month, April 10th. It's our 6-year anniversary, and we are talking about trends and workforce development, which is something I don't really know a lot about. So I'm excited to have that conversation. So take care, everyone, and thank you again.
Thank you. Take care.
Friday Five Live is brought to you by Innovative Educators. Innovative Educators offers 6 online services for your onboarding support and training needs. Visit us at innovativeeducators.org to see how we can support your student success initiatives.